Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas, and I am so glad you are tuning in today. In this episode, I'm joined by Courtney Nalboff and Ruth Macy to discuss the postpartum body, self-compassion, and their new book, Your Postpartum Body, The Complete Guide to Healing After Pregnancy. In this episode, we are exploring radical self-acceptance and compassion in the healing process after you give birth. We're addressing some of the societal pressures and debunking myths about postpartum recovery. We are looking at some of the critical elements for recovery after birth, such as rest, hydration, nutrition, and support, and offering some practical advice on how to prioritize these needs and the role of support systems, how to actually activate the support that you're actually needing. One of the major takeaways for me in this conversation and one of the highlights was when we explored the physical and mental toll of lactation, the human cost of lactating, and the impact of weaning actually on your mental health. We explore balancing the benefits of breastfeeding with the need for self-care and support. I am so glad you're tuning in today. You might notice though in the episode, my audio is just a little off. You know, prior to recording, I did notice that my toddler had sprinkled some powdered sugar around my microphone. Why did she have access to my microphone? Why was she holding powdered sugar? These are questions for another day, but I didn't realize that she had probably, in fact, sprinkled some powdered sugar into the microphone. And so the audio isn't great. I did my best to fix it up for you, for us. I apologize. Maybe as a parent yourself, you get it. You know, these things happen. All right. Hope you enjoy. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Ruth and Courtney. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I am really excited to dive into our conversation today and talk all about the postpartum body and compassion for our postpartum bodies. This is something that comes up for so many women and clients that I work with and birthing people. And so I'm really excited for us to get a chance to chat. Before we dive in, I would love to give you both a chance to introduce yourselves to the Holding Space listener community.
Hi, I'm Courtney Nalaboff. I am a teacher and a writer and a musician. I live on a little tiny island off the coast of Maine. It's only accessible by boat or airplane. And I became a postpartum person 10 years ago. And I'm really grateful to have Ruth as my guide on that very confusing and frustrating journey. And that we were able to collaborate to bring this book to you.
And I'm Ruth Macy. I'm a pelvic health physical therapist. I've been a physical therapist for almost 20 years and specializing in pelvic health for 12 years. And Courtney and I met on the tiny island, but no longer live in the same location. I am mainland located, but still in Maine. And I'm really excited to chat about this because I treat a lot of postpartum people as well. And I think their mental health is so important and often tied to their physical health and physical ability. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to chat about this.
Yeah. So you mentioned a book. So you have a book coming out called Your Postpartum Body, The Complete Guide to Healing After Pregnancy. And oh my gosh, do we
do we need this book? Do we, what I would give to have this resource, you know, 13 years ago when I, you know, first became a postpartum person and was navigating, just not recognizing my body. Also, you know, healing after a traumatic birth experience. So feeling like not only did I not recognize my body, but like feeling like I couldn't trust my body. And there was just this really disembodied experience. And there's so much happening to your body that's all of that combined created a really difficult situation for me. And you know, I got support eventually, but I feel like what my hope is with our conversation today is to reach folks that so they can start getting that support sooner to, you know, build that bridge and bring that awareness. And so talk to us a little bit first about what brought both of you to having this passion for supporting the postpartum body, and we can maybe, you know, from there go into the conversation around having compassion for the postpartum body.
I mean, my entry point was so selfish. I was, I guess, 5 years postpartum and still just so confused about why things weren't working the way they used to. I came to fitness kind of later in my 20s and got really into it and so enthusiastic about running and Pilates and this and that. And then I was like, what, but nothing feels the way it used to. And I don't know what to expect and I don't know what to do. And I'm a reader and I want there to be a book for everything. And I had a book about baby sleeping and baby eating and baby brain development and every stage of pregnancy. I could tell you what fruit the embryo was compared to every second. And then I looked and there was not a book. And I was so confused by that. And, you know, because I'm a writer and because this is just sort of how I tackle the world, I said, well, I guess I have to write the darn thing. And then started a Google Doc that was just a list of the complaints that I had and then was like, but wait, I don't know anything. And then, you know, it took me a little bit. And then I said, well, no, I really want this to happen. And Ruth was the person that I had been going to with all of my questions. I mean, she would just sort of talk to me and lay hands and move me around and really was the only person who fixed anything for me in that time period. You know, selfishly, I then went to Ruth and was like, this book has to exist because I would like to read it. And would you do the honor of writing this with me? Because she had already acquired a lot of this passion and expertise in her career.
So obviously I said yes.
Yes, you said yes. And thank goodness you said yes.
Thank goodness.
I love how you, the two of you came together where it was a Google Doc full of complaints and pain and questions. Like, it's like, that's a beautiful place to start because it's such a relatable place to start because that's where your readers are starting at. Right. And so to come with that and then to have that desire to find the answers, not just for yourself, but then for the rest of us. Thank you.
I will add, Courtney asked me in 2020, and I think that's just a very difficult time in medical history. And I think people who were birthing in that time and postpartum at that time will know exactly what I'm talking about, especially if they had more than one pregnancy that was outside of the 3 years that were really intense. Where you couldn't have a birthing partner in with you. You had to go into all your appointments alone. You're navigating even more of the unknown that already exists. And I remember I work in an outpatient facility and my boss was like, you don't have any urgent patients that need to get in, right? And I was like, pregnant and postpartum people, hard stop, no one else, like everyone else can probably wait unless they had surgery for some reason. But those people are already not getting the support and care that they would normally get from their support system, from their partners, from their families. They need to come in and get seen and get care. So that was the other part of, like, I already knew. I had already been working in the field for a long time before we started writing this book, and that just made it even more clear how hard it was for people who don't have care and support in their life.
And I should say that when Ruth was helping me, it was because she's my friend, not because I was a patient of hers. She's far enough away from me now that it's not convenient for me to see her as a practitioner. So I was lucky. Like, it was just luck and privilege that even gave me any of that information that I was getting from my friend, not from my healthcare providers. So, like, a little piece of me was like, everybody should have a Ruth. And now everybody actually has actual Ruth, which is the best of all possible worlds.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you for bringing Ruth to all of us, and for your skills of, I'm sure with the writing and the consolidating of the issues, right, that you experience and the willingness to share pieces of your story. So let's start here. When we talk about the power of compassion when it comes to healing your postpartum body and mind, because compassion, there's so much that's happening around us with our body that it can feel like we don't have agency around, you know? And compassion is something that it can be very difficult, but that we can have agency to do the work to be able to access. And so what would you guys say, what does putting your needs and mental health first look like after giving birth? Because there is so much that's actually being asked of you to give. So what does putting your needs and mental health first look like during this period of your life?
So I would love to dive in from my PT hat and what I see happening in my regular work. So first of all, there's a huge bootstraps mentality happening to personal health that's being pushed forward by self-help programming that's so ubiquitous across all internet platforms. That's really selling this idea that if you do everything right, nothing bad will happen to your body.
Yeah.
And I really think that's hurting a lot of people mentally. I think the opposite, which is like what I call bootstraps theory, which is like women have been giving birth for thousands of years, like get over it, pull yourself up, get yourself out of the ditch. So I think there's a continuum of thought that any single person listening to this might find themselves on. I grew up in a bootstraps family. Don't complain. There's always someone who has it worse than you. Technically, I had a very medical birth, but I pushed myself through it because I just kept saying, well, this can't possibly be that bad. So like for reference, I went home with a Foley catheter of my own urine with a bag strapped to my leg. So it wasn't like a small thing, but I like went to a 50th birthday party that day, just so you know where I was 16 years ago, by the way, a very long time ago. Yeah. So before I was even practicing in this field, if I had had a pregnancy after practicing in this field, I would have probably scolded me. So thinking about that continuum and what the information is that people are taking in right now, I think a lot of people are like, well, I must have done something wrong in my birth to feel strange postpartum. And that's a really hard thought to undo, which I'm sure you know. Other people might frame their lens outward and say, my care team did something wrong, and that's why I'm having this outcome. And I want to come from a place of both things are probably partially not true and maybe also true, and it's already over. So if you dwell on what happened or who you were, or the person they were at that moment that you had to get through that period of time, I think it's really hard to push through that. And so I think first starting from a place of understanding that we do need to get rid of that paradigm of like women have been giving birth for thousands of years. My knee-jerk reaction to that is yes, and that's why childbirth was the leading cause of death. So we really need to start from a place of moving out of these really cute, nostalgic rose-colored glasses, but also not making everybody's health a personal affront if anything goes wrong. So starting from a place of like what Sonia and Renee Taylor wrote a book called The Body Is Not an Apology. And so a lot of what she talks about in that book is radical self-acceptance. And I think if I wanted someone postpartum to be their best self, radical self-acceptance, wherever you are, however much support you have, what other type of birth you have, however medical it was or wasn't, the status of your infant's health, the status of your health, whoever you let in the room or didn't, whether you lactated successfully or didn't, if you can't start from that place of radical self-acceptance, and it doesn't even have to be love at first, you might be really angry and have a lot of other thoughts to process, but if you could start from that place of, I am in this place right now, and I accept that I'm in that place right now, then you're more likely to make decisions to foster the health and healing of a typical human body. So I'll let Courtney talk about that. We have sort of a pillar of things. And in healthcare, the number one thing that we want to be doing with healthcare is treating you in such a way that it's better than time. So time is the number one healer. So whatever way we impact your physical health, it needs to be better than just giving you time.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, just looking at myself during that time, everything was great until I hemorrhaged after I had my baby. And that really influenced the next couple of weeks for me. I was very anemic. I was maybe even more tired than I would have been otherwise. Lactation was not easy at first. But I really just wanted to be able to move my body because I had been so physically active really right up until I went into labor. I went on a 2-mile swamp hike the day before I went into labor, and that's just kind of where I was at. And suddenly, you know, if I just walked around the house, I started shedding these appalling chunks of lochia. I was exhausted. And then, you know, once my milk came in, then I had this ravenous child just attached to my chest. So to be able to give myself the time and the space to say, like, nope, it is okay that I am just lying here, that was something that didn't come naturally to me at all. That took practice, that took my body sort of saying, hey, dummy, like, you have to lie down now. Like, if you are up and around, you are going to hurt later. And even with all of the things that I was open to and was willing to learn and sort of adjust my behavior, I still started running way too early with no information and injured myself. And I still had years sort of just trying to figure out what was going on in my pelvis. But even to say, like, actually, I think I need help with this was hard. And being willing to say that and giving yourself the space to say, like, I'm not going to figure this out on my own, then it sends you into the maelstrom of, like, trying to figure out where you're going to get the help from, which is can be a really scary place. And if you're not feeling like you're worthy of that time and energy and support, and you're not compassionate with yourself, if you're saying to yourself, no, like, just hang in there, like, you're going to be fine, just keep moving, it'll be great, just do this exercise you saw on Instagram or whatever, then you might not be willing to put in that level of self-care. And I don't mean self-care in the, like, influencery way. I mean literally saying, like, I cannot figure this out. I need help. How do I get to the help that I need? How do I invest the time? And I live somewhere where in order to get to any sort of specialized care, you have to get on a ferry boat for an hour. There are barriers, there are geographical, socioeconomic, psychological barriers for a lot of populations. And if you're not coming from a place of feeling like you are worthy of that, it is really hard to put in the effort.
When I hear you both talk about this radical self-acceptance, what I really hear is, like, accepting self and all the things that come with self, which is the things that we're feeling. Like, there's going to be maybe anger or anxiety or grief, right? There's going to be signals from our body that something is too much, or that there's something that we're needing. But if we if we, you know, these two ends of the spectrum, right? If we feel like we just have to like push through, or that like, you know, we are supposed to be doing all these things in order for it to be successful, or we're just waiting for just like white knuckling to like reach some milestone in hopes that like then it'll be better, right? Like, then we're not meeting ourselves where we're at right then and there. And like, there's so much data that our emotions give us and so much information that our body is signaling to us, but it can be really tricky, especially in this period of time, especially if we've had a really intense or traumatic birth experience, right? And so much is changing in our body to be able to access that. And so what I'd love to hear from you both is, okay, what are the absolute needs during the first 6 weeks and beyond of postpartum recovery? Because what a lot of us experience is we have this baby, and then they're like, okay, we want to see the baby this time and the baby this time, and we need to check the baby again this time. And then for us, it's, we'll see you in 6 weeks. And when for majority of what birthing people are experiencing is, then we're going to clear you then for sex and exercise, right? Which is like, which is insane to me, because the messaging that sends, right? Okay. There's a lot of needs in those first 6 weeks. So what are the absolute needs for birthing people, for postpartum people, and yeah, beyond what, like, you know, we might initially think of in terms of self-care, like what are we actually needing in those first 6 weeks?
We've got it really concretely laid out, I think, under that exact heading in the book, and it's rest, hydration, nutrition, and support. That's it. That is what you need. And that looks like, it might look like slightly different things for different people, but baseline, you need to drink enough fluids and you need to eat enough food, particularly protein and fiber, but like enough food, and you gotta rest. And you've got to find support where you can. And we understand really deeply that that is a really privileged thing to say that somebody needs, and that the human resources of support are very unevenly available, just as the human resource of food and the resource of rest and the resource of hydration are. But those are the requirements.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So before anybody reaches for what Courtney and I really don't agree with is a bounce back mentality. So before anybody reaches for a bounce back book, if they're not meeting their requirements for rest, as a physical therapist, I see a lot of people whose milk isn't coming in because they're not getting enough sleep and they're not eating enough. And I've seen people who are leaking because their pelvic floors aren't healing well, like in the background of your body, like if to use some computer language, you know, there's a program running, and that program running is your cardiovascular system is changing. So you are literally going to stay tired, and no amount of caffeine or some kind of like infrared sauna is going to change that until your healing's complete. And so that's where we say, like, there is a time component. And also, we want you to not get in your own way and try to jump the gun and do too much too fast because you think more is better. And that really comes back again to that radical self-love idea of like, more is not better. How are you doing at baseline? Can you do baseline hierarchical needs? And if not, don't add anything else.
Yeah. There's so much systemic around this that is like so important to acknowledge in the nuance for each individual experience. But let's name this first. What you're describing here are also the top protective factors, like from my perspective as a mental health provider, these are the top protective factors for, you know, peripartum mood and anxiety disorders: support, rest, right? Like nourishment. So when folks come in and they're postpartum, and these are the first things I'm asking about, right? How much sleep are you getting? How can we find a way to protect parental sleep, right? There's so much out there about how to get a baby to sleep through the night. And the truth is that with time, a baby will sleep through the night. Like you said, time will bring that. And yes, of course, there are, I don't want to minimize activating support to support your baby as well. But what I definitely want to prioritize, knowing that babies are not going to sleep through the night for a period of time, is how can we get like even a chunk of 4 hours at first for a parent to get some sleep, restorative rest, and how can we then activate support around that individual to make that happen? How can we, with the support network that somebody has, it might not be family jumping up to help, and there's going to be grief around that, right? Like maybe they're not close, maybe they are, and they're just not showing up in the way that you expected. But how can we look at the actual support that you have and the resources that you have and activate it in a meaningful way while also holding space for the feelings that are going to come up around that, right? The anger, the grief, the like, you know, and naming the fact that the structures and systems around us are like, what bothers me about self-care is that it asks nothing of the systems around us to change, right? And like, there needs to be big systemic changes, right? We're talking parental leave, we're talking the healthcare system. Like there's some big things here that need to change, and naming that for folks, like, you're not crazy. Like this is not how it's supposed to be. Like this has to change. But When I'm working with someone and, you know, they're in the midst of this, okay, the big systemic changes haven't changed yet. What can we do with the system that you're living in? How can we get you sleep? How can we activate the support, right? How can we work with the system within the system? You know, maybe the system you're interacting with is maybe a partner who isn't stepping in, right? And you're carrying a lot of this load, the mental load, on your own, right? Like, how can we now bring that partner into this work? How can we, let's do couples work now. Let's find a way to make this work so that you're both getting rest and you're both feeling supported. Because I know for us, my partner actually experienced postpartum depression. And that was actually the majority of the research I did when I was doing my dissertation and such, was because, you know, we were both struggling. When you have one partner struggling, the chances are another partner is struggling as well. There's a high risk factor. So
I'm going to say you kind of start from like, what's the most resourced answer from, mm-hmm. you know, and resources could be money, time, people, access, et cetera. So the most resourced answer is hire a postpartum doula. They're amazing. Look them up. They're around. And again, there's an access issue there. A postpartum doula is going to help you make this plan specific to your lifestyle. And so many people, I don't think I've ever heard of anyone hiring one that was sad about it. They might help you. They might help the baby. They might help your partner. They might help your house. Because all of those things are the things that keep you from helping you. So that's the most resourced answer, is hire outside help. If the reasons that you're not prioritizing sleep are centered around your home, hire home care, hire a house cleaner, hire some kind of service that you know you're going to get those high protein, high fiber meals that you need for yourself. In pelvic health care, a lot of people might find it interesting that there's a huge correlation between constipation and anxiety, which can lead you to not sleep. So because of the medications that you're going through, this is particularly true for no one or for people who have never had an interaction with being unwell, for being in the very medical healthcare system, that postpartum time period is like, whoa, what just happened to me? That's why so many people say that. For people who are have more of a chronic health history or maybe already disabled, they know. We probably don't need to give them any resources because they have tried literally everything to improve their quality of life. But if it's brand new to you, it's really shocking, along with all the physiological changes you're going through. So get help, but also take it, use it, set time, ask your partner and the people that you live with or are staying with you to make the time that they are with you about you, not about the baby. That's really mean. I know people are going to say that. They're going to be like, that's so mean. It does not matter who holds the baby in their first 6 months of life. It matters whether or not you ate and slept and pooped. I mean that very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what a baby needs more than anything is a parent who is well. And so I agree. I agree with you. I don't think it's mean. I think that it's actually really acknowledging what we need to be prioritizing and how the narrative needs to shift.
I'm just thinking back to my own visits from my parents and my in-laws, who were, you know, they were wonderful, and it was so wonderful to have them there. And there were times when I was like, can somebody please just plant the potatoes, because otherwise I'm going to go do it. And I did actually plant the potatoes, but, you know, it was spring and I was like, it's my garden fun time and I'm going to wear the child on my back or put her in a little basket and I'm going to go plant my garden. And the child was not interested in that because she was cluster feeding. She was 3 weeks old. And then everyone wants to hold the baby and the baby's screaming because the baby just wants to eat. And I was like, literally, I just need somebody to put the potatoes in the ground. And it's like hard, and people don't always know how to respond to those specific asks, I feel, because they're like, no, let me do this elaborate thing, or let me hold the baby. And it's like, yes, that's lovely. And also, I'm going to injure myself doing this thing that really needs to get done unless somebody does it for me, is kind of where I was at with that. And like, I guess it's like, you know, we want to be here for the postpartum person, but we want to be here for the people around the postpartum people too, and really say, like, listen to what people are saying. And if someone's saying, hey, could you just switch the laundry over? Because that's genuinely the most helpful thing for me right now. And it is hard to make those specific asks and feel like they're going to get heard and honored. So if the people around the postpartum people are practicing hearing and honoring those specific asks, they'll only get culturally easier to make. That's a systemic shift that everybody could own a little piece of.
I am here for that. Give me all of those things, right? The things that we could be doing in our little world, in our homes, that's going to create this bigger overtime systemic shift. Because, you know, gosh, our kids will witness that. And then maybe that becomes the next generation becomes more normalized to be like, can you plant the potatoes for me? Right? Like because sometimes what we need is for someone to hold the baby so that we can go rest, or so that we, because we're feeling really touched out. And sometimes we need someone to go put the potatoes in the ground. Like
literal potatoes, or the figurative potatoes. You pick. Exactly. In my case, literal potatoes.
The actual potatoes.
I was very happy when people brought us food, because buying, prepping, cooking food is a huge barrier. So many people cannot make time for that. And so everybody who brought me like really nutritious pre-made meals is really nice. And like, because I gave birth 16 years ago, meal trains weren't really a thing. And there's certainly like whole websites and apps centered around that now. And we interviewed a lot of people for the book and everybody was like, oh my God, my meal train saved my life.
Yeah.
North Haven, the island I live on, loves a meal train. It is one of the things we do best as a community. I'm like in one right now for a friend who just had her baby. And it is, and it was. And it also, not just the food, but another adult in my household who wanted to have a conversation with me was priceless. That was such a big deal to me, just to get to chit chat with somebody. Because I could chit chat while I nursed, and I could chit chat while I sat, you know, or lounged around or ate something, like, but I'm very social and need a lot of stimulus. And it was hard to get out of the house with my very spitty uppy child and my like anemic self. And so people coming to me and just like hanging out was amazing, like really incredible.
And you know, the listener, take a moment to tune in to be like, what is something that would make me feel more myself in this moment, right? And for some people that might be like having someone come over and be able to just chit chat and have that adult interaction. And for some, it might be, I just desperately want to be in my house by myself for a while, right? Where I like, that's how I'm going to recoup and feel more myself and feel like I'm able to reclaim some of this energy so I can be present for the other things that are pulling me and that need me. Whenever I've asked and polled, what is the number one thing that folks said was the most helpful during postpartum? Meal train is always up there. It's usually like meal train, it's therapy, it's, you know, pelvic floor help, it's it's like food, it's support, it's right, like a nighttime doula or someone who comes at night so that they can sleep. It's someone that comes with the kids out.
A big cup with a straw would be like number 1 to 3 on my list. Giant cup with a straw, because I am not good at hydrating. I'm always a little underhydrated. And I wanted to steal the one from the hospital, which is the jug with the straw, but I couldn't sneak it out. But the cup with the straw, because hydration is so important. And like that makes it so much easier because you've got the baby and then you don't want to dump the water, but then you can carry it around with you. Straw cup.
Yep, you're right. That's another thing that's named, is like, you know, a hydration station or whatever. It's any way to become more hydrated.
I also think it's really important to, I'm thinking back to one of the postpartum humans we interviewed, and she was so tired. She was the primary breadwinner, and her husband didn't make enough money, and daycare was really expensive. So he ended up taking basically leave of absence from the work that he was doing. And so she would get home from a very physical job, and she took a little bit of time. I don't think she was able to take 12 weeks because she's self-employed, and it's really hard to survive. Maine's actually kind of a expensive state to live in, considering our wages are also low. Comparatively. And I remember having this conversation. She was just like, I just wish someone, not me, would have had a conversation with my husband, because I would get home and he would tell me that I needed to do all the nighttime feedings because I needed to bond with the baby. And I was like, that's not how that works. Is there any way that you can really push into that, like, I'm burning the candle at both ends because now I'm up with this cutie pie all night after working a very full, very physical job. And I think that's a reality for a lot of folks, that their message that if you don't spend time with the baby during the day, that there won't be bonding unless you're with them every second that you're home. And some people may do that to themselves, or it may be brought in by an outside party or an outside thought. And I think it's really important. Like, one of the biggest things, honestly, everybody that we interviewed about the book and people that I talked to, one of the biggest woes of postpartum is all about lactation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I don't think we can have a conversation about sleep and caring for yourself and support unless we can really look at the human cost of lactation. And if we're talking about low resource people, so again, maybe single parents, other kids in the house, not a lot of funds, you were working two jobs, that's a reality for a lot of people, then the cost of buying formula for many people while taking money out of your piggy bank is much less than the human cost of getting up every 2 hours, than cluster feeding, than not having that other person. And, you know, realistically, every pediatrician will tell you that bottle-fed babies kind of sleep better. And please don't, I mean, listeners, like, anecdotally, I'm sure some of you are like knocking it out of the park with your breastfeeding, and that is not an endorsement to not breastfeed. It's saying that we really need to look at each individual birthing person's circumstances may not be the same. And the biggest reason that people report not breastfeeding is a lack of resources, lack of support from their workplace, from their partner, in access to breastfeeding supplies, pumping. All of those things can really be a barrier. I mean, if you're a person who's doing a lot of pumping and storing and getting it to daycare, like, you know, it's so much work. And I feel like because we have some research that says there are huge benefits to breastfeeding long term, et cetera, people are really pushing this to the extreme at the detriment of their mental health.
Absolutely. And we talked to people who felt so pressured in that direction and didn't understand that they had the option to cease lactation right off the bat, didn't understand how to cease lactation when they decided it was time to cease lactation. I was in a situation where we supplemented for the first week just because my milk hadn't come in yet because I was so anemic. And then I nursed for 17 months. And then when I decided it was time to stop, or really like my kid decided it was time to stop, I did not know what to do. And I am an extremely well-resourced person with medical people all over my family tree. We had lactation consultants at the hospital where I gave birth. And I still like just weaned myself right into a mental health crisis because I had no idea. So in addition to all of the actual barriers and actual challenges, the hormonal component of lactation and ceasing lactation too is profoundly impactful on whether or not you're gonna try to lactate or try to cease lactation. And it is something that I went into it completely uninformed about. Just no idea. All anyone ever says is like, oxytocin is the bonding hormone and you will release it while you're nursing. And like, sure, like that's great. But then what happens when you stop producing the bonding hormone and, you know, you just, what is going on all of a sudden there? Nobody wants to talk about that because everyone just wants to put little blinders on and say like, breastfeeding's great. Everyone should breastfeed. You should do it if you can. And we're going to do everything we can to get you to do this thing that, like, I'm glad I made that decision. It was a decision that worked for us. And there was no intentional conversation around the cost to me. And again, very well resourced, was in a job that was supportive, took 9 months off from my job, was like a boob on demand for a very, very long time. It was in a community where I felt comfortable just whipping it out and, you know, putting the baby on my chest wherever I was, honestly, like at the restaurant, at the community center, nobody cared. All of those things being true, it still brought me to the brink of a real, like a true mental health crisis. And so imagine what those feelings could be if there are even fewer supports and even less information in place. We've got to be more intentional as a society around this.
We really do. Thank you so much for naming the human cost of lactating and the impact that weaning has, because this is a huge point in time when folks actually end up reaching out to me because it was so unexpected that they were going to have this shift in their mood or this impact on their mental health. And it's absolutely real. And there's reasons around it, but we don't really talk about it. And there's not a ton of support around that stage of it, right? So thank you so much for naming these pieces. Now let's wrap up here with how your book fits into this. Okay. So, you know, how does the postpartum body, your book, show up for people in this, you know, very challenging and nonlinear journey of health in the postpartum experience?
Our goal with this was really to democratize access to this information. You can get like little bits and pieces if you're lucky, if you follow someone on Instagram or you know somebody or you happen to be in a healthcare oasis. We wanted to pull all of those pieces together in one place and have it be a book that you can read start to finish, or you could say, I'm like way past the first 6 weeks, but I am really struggling with my feet. Why do my feet hurt all the time? There's a chapter about your feet. We wanted to present the body as an integrated system and talk about ways to reintegrate the body systems that are impacted by pregnancy, so that you're not being parceled out by different healthcare professionals, right? Oh, the foot person and the pelvis person and the breast person and this, right?
For people listening, it is called Your Postpartum Body, and we really did write it that you could read it in your third trimester. You could also read it 10 to 20 years postpartum if you're still having issues that you feel like stemmed from that time period that haven't resolved. We don't have a lot of research about whether or not things resolve, so it's worth giving it a shot. I mean, why not? So part one is really about your 0 to 6 weeks. I often call the 6 week visit the "but did you die" visit. And I mean that really seriously, because we are monitoring the maternal mortality rate and it's not great. And the risk of maternal mortality is very high in the first 40 days, which is a lot of the reason that 6 week visit exists. And really it's to make sure you made it through the death window. And I know that's creepy and morbid, but it's true.
Yeah.
After that time, because you've rested and hydrated and tried to work on boundaries and support and how to accept and ask for help, and you're pooping and things are shifting, we shift into part two of the book where there is a chapter for every major body system. So like Courtney mentioned, it's the foot and breathing and posture and of course the abs and the pelvic floor. And then we end that section with a chapter on how to integrate the whole body together. And then part three is if you're a person who really enjoys some specific fitness activities like yoga, Pilates, CrossFit, running, am I missing one? Kettlebell. Yep. Oh my gosh, can't believe I almost missed kettlebell. those are things that come up a lot as far as like, how do I modify? What's a good way to think about returning to these programs? And that's most of what people need. So of course I'm a physical therapist and I want people to move their body, and people are really happy often moving their body, but they're unhappy when it's painful or it's not working the way it used to. And so we're really, we're not telling anybody what to do. I think that's really important from the book standpoint. We are not telling you, you have to do anything. If you want to lactate, there's recommendations for that. If you want to wean and end lactations, we have very clear signposting to that. We are not telling you what to do with your body. We're giving you options on how to heal. And it doesn't matter if you gave birth vaginally with an episiotomy and Pitocin and it was a very medical birth, or if all that happened and you feel like that was a great birth because the outcome was that you feel healthy and the baby's healthy. It doesn't matter if you had a cesarean birth. It doesn't matter if you're a surrogate and you need to heal your body and there's no infant to take home, or something more tragic like stillbirth. It doesn't matter who you're in a relationship with, whether you're single or partnered with a same-sex person or heterosexual relationship, you are covered in every identity that you could possibly be in as a person who gave birth. And so our goal is just that if you need a really quick handy resource about literally anything we could find, it's in there.
And it is based on the most current information we have access to. Ruth mentioned that it is under-researched. It is. It's under-researched and it's underfunded. But this is the best information that we have right now. And we really, really hope that in the future, this is better studied and better researched and even better information gets into your hands. But we've got to start somewhere. And Your Postpartum Body is the place we're going to start together.
Thank you to both of you for this work. And we'll be linking that in the show notes so the listener can go straight there to access this resource, this incredible resource. Thank you so much. I can only imagine the time, the energy, the love that went into this, and grateful to you for starting us off here on a different path for postpartum care and honoring the postpartum body. And I have the book. I have early access to the book. The book is shiny. It's truly as approachable as they're describing. There's photos that just like it really feels like it does have Ruth here with us as our resource and Courtney's willingness to share her story and be so relatable. So thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time. Are you a parent based in California? If you are, and if you've been looking to get some support with a therapist, I would love to help you take that next step. Head to the link in the show notes where you can learn more about my virtual group practice. All moms ourselves, we are a group of therapists trained in evidence-based approaches like EMDR to support folks who are navigating fertility, pregnancy, postpartum parenting, anxiety, family issues, couples issues, relationship challenges, triggers through parenthood, navigating a big transition, processing your birth or loss. We're here for you. If you head to that link in the show notes and send an email through the contact page. You'll reach me directly. I will learn a little bit more about you and from there get you connected with one of us, but possibly me or one of us who is the best fit based on your schedule and based on your needs. We are currently accepting new clients. If you are not based in California, there's also a link in the show notes for you to help you take the next steps in your area to find a therapist that takes a similar approach. You deserve support, and I'm here for you to take that next step.